Good morning. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and I'm going to be your host for the next half hour. The show is called Final Draft. If you're new to Final Draft, it's a half hour every week of books, writing, and literary culture. Now, we're having a bit of a hiatus for the public holiday, school holiday sort of weekend, but that doesn't mean the books stop. We are featuring encore performances from some great conversations that we've had so far in 2019. Now, today on the show, we're going to be doing a classics book club. At the end of every month, Saturday, we feature an Australian classic in a book club type conversation that you can join in and read along with. Next week, we are going to sing the third Australian Classics book club, Eye for Isabel, by Amy Whiting. Today, we're going to have a book club conversation. It was The Women in Black by Madeline St. John. So you'll be hearing myself joined by David Winter, senior editor at Text Classics, as we discuss this really fantastic satirical book that takes us back to Sydney 1950s. Before we get there, though, I wanted to point of noting the Stella Prize. The 2017 Stella Prize was announced this week. It's the Stella Prize, if you're not familiar with it, is this absolutely fantastic prize in its fifth year now, celebrating Australian women in all their forms and genres. And the Stella Prize this year was won by the Museum of Modern Love by Heather Rose. And I'm going to be working on bringing you a conversation with Heather. We're going to discuss her win and her absolutely fantastic book. But if you've not yet discovered the Museum of Modern Love, it is this absolutely fantastic rumination on art and its creation. It takes us to New York, the Museum of Modern Art, where performance artist Marina Abramović put together a really sort of interesting performance art piece called The Artist is Present. And it's more than just this single performance, though. We have this really interesting story weaving characters together and looking into the way art is created and what art means in our lives. So that is going to be coming up. We're going to try and get you a conversation with Heather Rose in the weeks to come. But today, we're going to be revisiting an on of the Australian Classics Book Club, The Women in Black by Madeline St. John. It is coming up after this short break. You're on 2SER and this is Final Draft.
Sydney Writers Festival returns this May. Hundreds of curious, compassionate and insightful writers from around the world will gather in Sydney for Australian stories and ideas. They'll be sharing their wisdom, wit and knowledge at venues across the city from May 22 through 28. More info and tickets at swf.org.au. Sydney sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
Good morning, tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and I am, of course, Andrew Popel. And right now, it's a moment that we have been building towards a new segment, Direction on Final Draft, as we explore the literature that has perhaps helped define our nation. Welcome to the inaugural Australian Classics by David Winter. David's a senior editor, who are our generous benefactors for the Australian Classics Book Club with Australian Classics in their Text Classics range. Welcome to Final Draft, David.
Thanks, Andrew. Hi.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And David, we have the pleasure of hosting the first Aussie Classics Book Club. We're going to be meeting once a month on the last Saturday to discuss a different novel and its contribution to Australian literature. If you want to join in, you can tweet along using the hashtag Australian Classics. You'll find us at Final Draft 2SER and at text_publishing. But without any further ado, let's talk about the books. And we're beginning with Madeline St. John's first novel, The Women in Black. And The Women in Black takes us back to Sydney of the late 50s and Goods Department Store. And there we enter the realm of ladies' cocktail frocks and the rarefied air of model gowns at the zenith of the silly season and the onslaught of the post-Christmas sales. Each day, the women imbue themselves in matching dresses that efface their individuality whilst outfitting Sydneysiders for the party season and dealing with personal struggles, basically of being a woman in a man's world. We have Lisa, the newcomer to the department. She's awaiting her leaving certificate results, and before she even considers uni, has to convince her father that women even need an education. Faye must confront the fact that her single life of freedom, especially when all the men are buffoons with only one thing in mind. Patty's boorish husband has disappeared. But does she even want him back? And Magda, seeming leader of the group, living always on the fringes because she's a refugee from Europe in the post-World War. That is the Women in Black. And David, who was Madeleine St. John?
Madeleine St. John was quite an obscure figure for much of her life, although that was not necessarily what she's destined to be. She grew up in quite a famous family. Her father, Ted, was a renowned lawyer in Sydney, and he became a Liberal MP. He famously stood up to two prime ministers, Holt and later Gorton, and earned a lot of fans by doing that, but also got himself into a fair bit of trouble, you could say. Madeleine St. John was one of his daughters, and her mother died when Madeleine was 12, I think. She had come over from France. Her parents were Romanian Jews who had escaped pogroms, I believe. And Madeleine's mother figures large in her life. A critical break when this death occurs, and Madeleine is sent off to boarding school in Arthur. And to cut a long story short, she ends up in England, spending many, many years living in a council flat in Notting Hill, before Notting Hill was the place to be, and doing odd jobs, really just surviving. And by the time she came to some prominence as a writer in the 90s, she was quite sick. She was dependent on an oxygen machine, although she didn't stop her smoking. Interested either. So she really is quite a curious figure. There was a moment in her life where she might have burst forth along with many other people from the University of Sydney in the early 1960s. So there was the gang that included Jermaine Greer, Clive James, Larry, Robert Hughes, John Bell, Richard Walsh, all those famous people who so dominated the cultural landscape in Australia and abroad in the second half of the 20th century. Madeleine St. John sort of retreats, and it's only with the Women in Black that you know, she sort of bursts forth with sudden creative work. I think she was in her early 50s when she wrote it. And then quite quickly she wrote another three novels, and one of those, I think the last one, was shortlisted for the Booker Prize. So she actually became the first Australian woman to be shortlisted for the Booker. So it was quite a significant achievement. But I think by that point, Madeleine St. John didn't really consider herself Australian anyway. She was very caught up in her French heritage through her mother, and she had lived in England so long. So she had become sort of almost more English than the English, living in her little council flat with an angry cat and an oxygen machine.
Yeah, and she gained a little bit of a reputation as being perhaps a bit snobbish, not overly fond of her Australian heritage. And in fact, The Women in Black is the only novel that she set in Australia. I was really struck as I was reading it. It was about halfway through when I thought I better do a little bit of research, and I realised this novel had been published in 1993. Yeah. So complete was I in her world that I had assumed that she was writing at or soon after the time that she had set. And so complete is the picture, and amusing. I've heard this described as a comedy, but then there's also so much going on. Do you see this as just comedy, or is there much more in the way of satire and commentary happening in The Women in Black?
Well, I think it's both, Andrew. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's a work that functions so well as an entertainment. You know, you can sit down and be charmed by it, and it's quite bubbly and frothy. But just like any really good rich chocolate, once you bite in, there's a little bit more there. And I think in some ways, particularly in the half of the book, it's really quite scathing about aspects of Australian society in the 50s. I completely agree that you wouldn't know it was written in 1993. It feels you feel utterly immersed in the period. So for a start, she absolutely executed that perfectly, and I think that allowed her to probably exorcise some of her demons about growing up in that period, because the men in particular in this book, who are all really in the background, are pretty dreadful. And you know, you get the sense that she really was running a ruler over Australian society, and she didn't like, I think, much of what she found there. But then you have the influence of the so-called new Australians, the refugees coming in, the Europeans or Continentals, as they're called in the book and were called in the period. And there's this really quite charming interaction between the old world, Europe, coming into the new world, Australia, and the effect that it has on the people who are swept up in that.
Yeah, you've picked up on two threads that I want to explore a little bit, the male characters and how they are really almost plot points, and our point of view is exclusively through the women in black. But this of the Continentals, the refugees, so Magda, her husband Stefan, mm-hmm. Rudy, and the juxtaposition of the Anglo-Australian characters and these so-called Continentals. And Madeleine St. John really sets up this tension of the Australians are almost boorish. Their concerns seem, you know, facile or very petty. And then you have Magda, you have Stefan, who will, they speak freely, they discuss philosophy. And I really felt like she was exploring something about our attitudes. She would have been writing in maybe, we don't know how long this was written over, but thinking about this perhaps through the 80s and then into the 90s, there would have been new waves of migration to Australia that were being considered and migration around the world. How much of it do you think Madeleine's in exploring the idea of that sort of movement around the world and the way it's accepted?
I'm not sure about how much she would have taken into account post-50s migration, unless she was considering the effects on England, which, of course, had different patterns of migration in and out of the country. But I certainly think that she was very not only to portray a period where she was growing up, and, you know, I guess we can see perhaps something of herself, and it's also been said her best friend in the character of Lisa, who is the school leaver who's brought into the department at Goods. But I think she also did want to comment on Australian attitudes to migration and that post-war period, and it is such a critical juncture in Australian history, you know, really, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney. There was such a change with this migration from Europe, and generally being considered to be extremely good. You know, this is, in some ways, it's all telegraphed here in The Women in Black. You know, when you meet these, the men, the European men, they're charming, they're convivial. As you say, they talk freely, they talk about art and literature, they bring exotic food and wine. But it's all done naturally. There's, you know, it's part of, and the Australian men that we've met so far, and I've just sort of standard issue bastards, and, you know, they're really pig headed, and as you said, they're trying to hold women back. So it probably, if we boil it down to this, it sounds a little heavy handed, but I think that the book is sophisticated enough in its execution that you can enjoy the way that is done.
There is something of it, and maybe this comes to the idea of it being a fact that St. John was writing in England about reflections of her own life, a generation almost before, that there is resonance through what happened in Australia in the 80s and 90s with waves of immigration from Vietnam, from Lebanon, yep. and now again in the 2000s, where we, you know, for those who come across the sea, we have this arduous torture run of acceptance in society. She really picks up on that, but creates just such lovely characters in Magda, Stefan and Rudy that we can't help but think how wrong maybe we're going.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, she has cottoned on to something about the way that migration works and the way that integration works.
You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and you've just been listening to David Winter and myself discussing Madeleine St. John's The Women in Black. It was part of our first Australian Classics Book Club back in February. At the last Saturday of every month, We feature an Australian classic, we discuss it, we try to find out a little bit about who we are as Australians and what it means for an Australian classic to represent our society. Now, the rest of that conversation is going to be coming up, but we're going to take a track first. This is from Father John Misty, fantastic new song from Father John Misty, off his album Pure Comedy, and this is Total Entertainment Forever.
Swift, every night inside the Oculus Rift, after Mr. and the Mrs. finished dinner and the dishes. And now the feature's definition is so much higher than it was last year. It's like the images have all become real. Someone's living my life. Plugged into our hubs, skin and bones, a frozen smile on every face, as the stories replay, this must have been a wonderful place.
You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel. The track you just heard there was Father John Misty with Total Entertainment Forever. Now, today on the show, we're having a little bit of a break and revisiting an encore listen to our first Australian Classics Book Club. So join us as for the second part of our conversation, David Winter and myself discussing Madeline St. John's The Women in Black. I want to pick up on this idea of the shallowness and the lack of depth of the male character. We start to get a little bit of dimension to them, and compare that to the very narrow roles that the female characters, and I'm going to come to Lisa in particular, are expected to fulfill. We very early, she is someone with a unique intelligence, and yet she and many of the female characters seem to be expected to fulfill this sort of good wife, good woman role. And it's really, really interestingly, I think, juxtaposed between her infatuation with the model gown Lisette. So in the model gown section, there are all these unique dresses that cost an absolute bomb and most people can't afford. And literally the women in black are selling these dreams of femininity and style to their customers. They're locking people into this sort of role that they're supposed to perform. And then we have Lisa. While she's infatuated with Lisette, she's also continually reflecting on every small drama and triumph that she encounters, that this must be what life really looks like. We have this sort of seemingly perfect, naive wonderment that's going to ultimately grow, and she's going to be the most perfectly rounded character beyond the covers of this book. We don't get much further than a few weeks of her life. But I was really interested in the way St. John allowed her female characters to burst out of the societal expectations that were constantly being put on them.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really nice things about this book is that it offers you nothing too saccharine or pat, but it does, as you close it, you feel that, you know, there is hope for these women, and Lisa in particular, who kind of realises over those few weeks that there is just a chance that she can have it all. She probably doesn't realise how intelligent she is, but she has been captivated by poetry. You know, there's an early reference to her being besotted with a William Blake poem that she discovers at school. And then over the time at the department store, there's that particular frock that she spots, the Lisette model, and she aspires to own that. And it's not a superficial thing. I think it comes to represent really her growth, her coming out as an adult, but more than that, probably kind of style, glamour, you know, the sense that you can be intelligent, but you can also be out there in society and meeting people. And she's really been a wallflower up until we meet her, and, you know, and she begins this job.
I was really fascinated by the role of Miss Jacobs, and I'd love your thoughts, because very early on, she's established as something of a benign mystery. She's subject to, you know, the occasional bored musings of her colleagues, because she arrives and leaves the same every day. No one knows where she lives. No one knows what she does, what's in the contents of her string bag with brown-wrapped packages. And then she's constantly in the background. She's something of a recluse. And then she gives, I thought, perhaps the most stirring speech of the novel to Lisa about standing up against sexist expectations and just to put their noses out of joint for them, referring basically to the male establishment. Yeah. Do you think we can read anything into her almost snobbish persona, given that something similar was attributed to St. John, and the role of this speech to our entire reading of the book?
Yeah, I really like that idea, Andrew. That's that it's a sort of walk-on role for the adult St. John, the author kind of coming into the book, and it, you know, in a sense, the speech could be didactic, but it's not. It's so stirring, and it's because it's such a shock. You knew all along that this character had hidden depths, because everyone alludes to it. She's such a mystery woman, and it turns out she's been watching everything. So, and she's sussed it all out, you know. And she's absolutely a fan of Lisa, and it's a really nice moment in the book, and it could tip over the edge, but it's just so, I think. Yeah,
it is. I felt though that these little bits of St. John emerged towards the end of the book. There's also the really sort of funny tongue-in-cheek deprecation of university life. Lisa must finally, Lisa Leslie, we haven't even talked about that Lisa wants to change her name to identify herself and individualize herself. She's got to confront her dad, though. Her dad says things that would be absolutely shocking to us now about women even needing an education.
Yeah.
He didn't even want her to finish her HSC, but then he talks about she can go to university, but if she hangs out with any of those libertarians, which it really has to be noted, that was Madeleine St. John's own set when she went to university around the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's out of the house without a second look.
Yeah, yeah. I suspect that Madeleine St. John was always born to go to university, so she did not grow up in the kind of household that is described in this book. Although, you know, she had very different troubles to contend with. You know, I think it was a very, very difficult way to grow up. But yeah, I think she knew people in that scenario, and I think it's fair to say that her university experience, her time at Sydney Uni, was really critical to her. And of course, there was a very famous libertarian lecturer there who was who was really influential. And there was really such a scene. All the people that I mentioned earlier, all the famous Australian students who then went overseas, but including Bruce Beresford, who I should have mentioned, because he's still hoping to film this book, and he knew Madeleine St. John for much of his life.
Yeah, Bruce Beresford is, or has been, looking to film this for quite a while now. I think that was something that he'd actually discussed with Madeleine St. John, and even...
Yeah, I know about Ladies in Black, which I think opens tomorrow, and there's certainly a lot of excitement about that. Over the film, I did hear a rumour that perhaps it's a little bit closer to happening, but it certainly has been in the pipeline a long time. I think it would translate to the screen very well.
Mm. And that's probably just another nod to the fact that this is a classic, that we can conceive so easily of a film version that we can cross our fingers and hope. It'd be great to see Bruce Beresford realise that. The stage version, as we've mentioned.
Yeah.
So many ways that this story is continuing as part of our consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't see this being a book that Australians would ever not want to read. You know, it's not dated. It just feels... it's so much of its time, and it tells you so much time. And fundamentally, it's also so enjoyable.
You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and you are listening to Final Draft. It's a half hour of books, writing, and literary culture. But look at the time. We've only got a few minutes left. Now, the conversation you have been listening to today is an encore performance of our first Australian Classics Book Club from back in February. That was David Winter and I discussing The Women in Black by St. John. If you want more Australian Classics Book Club, you can tune in next week. Our third Australian Classics Book Club will be Eye for Isabel by Amy Whitting. So really excited to be bringing them to you. If you want to listen back, go to Tom into all the Australian Classics Book Clubs and follow them as they are released. Now, I'm looking at the time. It is almost the end of the show. I want to send a big thanks out to David Winter. He's a senior editor at Text. He's in the Australian Classics Book Club. I also want to remind you, 2017 Stella Prize was announced this week. Huge congratulations to Heather Rose. Huge congratulations to all the shortlisted authors. The Stella Prize is so important in the Australian literary landscape. So get behind it and tweet out on the socials. Amazing for Heather Rose, amazing for the Stella Prize. We're going to try and get a conversation. We'll reflect on that win. Now, it's time for me to leave. The Vulture's Nest is coming up next, and I'm going to say goodbye with a track. This is from Laura Mvula, a fantastic artist that I discovered while I was up at Blues Fest in Byron Bay last weekend. Laura Mvula, I'm a bit late to the game, but you can join me. And this song is called Phenomenal Woman. My name's Andrew Popel. I'll see you next week for more Final Draft.
People say, 'cause they don't know you.